Well, you know, that's we have to go. We're flush out of time, and that's a subject that really would take a whole other hour. Unfortunately, we're getting into it. I mean, because it's a really significant part of this disinformation war going on, a parallel war to the actual war going on, which is a terrible, terrible war. And everybody's around the world is kind of paralyzed and feeling terrible because there's massive suffering going on. But we do need to have a clear-sighted view of the actual, you know, dynamics that set this in motion. And I appreciate having you on to talk about that, but we are out of time. Thank you so much, Ray McGovern.
You're most welcome, Paul.
All right. Stay tuned for more great programming. We are in our spring membership drive. One quick last reminder, go to kboo.fm and support this kind of truth-seeking, whatever your position. You must agree we need to hear these voices, because there is a drumbeat going on that doesn't really allow for the kind of voices you just heard. Go to kboo.fm, click on donate, or text KBOO to 54321. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Ty, for running the board. Bye, everybody.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 8:59 a.m. Next up is Fight the Empire.
Well, good morning. This is Per Fogring, and it's a beautiful day to continue fighting the empire. That was an excellent discussion the previous year, Paul Rowland's show with Ray McGovern. I heard about the last third of it. I wish I'd tuned in earlier, but anyway, it was very enlightening, and we sort of keep the discussion going on the same general topic. What is going on between the U.S. and Ukraine? Recently, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi made a little quick trip to Ukraine and came back and said Monday that Russia's invasion of Ukraine warrants the strongest possible military response. That's a quote. And that the U.S. Shouldn't be deterred by warnings from Russia. In other words, don't worry about what Putin might be saying. We're going to go ahead with a strongest possible military response. Pelosi made these comments from Poland a day after a trip to Ukraine, where she met with Volodymyr Zelensky in Kiev, and the House Speaker received a warm reception from Zelensky, who presented her with the Order of Princess Olga, a Ukrainian civil decoration presented to women who make contributions to the Ukrainian state. On Monday, Pelosi held a meeting with Polish President Andrzej Duda in Warsaw to discuss the U.S. and NATO's increasing support for Ukraine. Poland has emerged as one of Europe's strongest supporters of Ukraine and recently sent over 200 Soviet-designed T-72 tanks to the Ukrainians in an escalation of NATO's military aid. On top of the military response, Pelosi said the strongest sanctions, quote-unquote, are also necessary to make the case that Russia's war was not tolerable. We shouldn't do anything less because of a threat from Russia, she said. The U.S. military response has involved pouring weapons into Ukraine, providing Ukrainians with intelligence to target Russian troops, and training Ukrainian forces on how to use weapons. President Biden has repeatedly ruled out sending troops to Ukraine to fight Russia directly, but despite what he's doing, instead of sending U.S. troops, he's pouring in all kinds of arms and training, and who knows what the trainers might be doing there besides just giving lessons in making war. But despite the risk, ultra hawks in Washington are eyeing ways to get the U.S. directly involved. Representative Adam Kinzinger, a Republican from Illinois, has introduced a bill for a new authorization for the use of military force that would give President Biden war powers to intervene in Ukraine if Russia uses chemical, biological, or nuclear weapons. Well, personally, I kind of doubt that Russia would be as foolhardy to do that, but that does not mean they may not be accused of doing that. It's a very tense situation, and it could blow up really at any time. So if anybody wants to call to keep this discussion going, and there's some very interesting calls in Paul Roland's show before this, the number to call is 503-231-8187. This is a kind of discussion, actually, that you're not going to hear this kind of discussion on any other station on the dial. KBOO brings you people that you don't hear elsewhere. It brings you points of view you don't hear elsewhere. And that's why KBOO really needs your support. This is a listener-supported station. We get almost all of our money from our listeners. You know, what a concept, where the listeners can sort of take over a spot on the airwaves and run it the way that suits them, the way that educates and motivates them, rather than depending on sponsors from big corporations and whatever. Make no mistake that even other public stations have a lot of corporate support, kind of more behind the scenes and not as blatant and not as overwhelming as the constant ads you hear on commercial radio, but it is there. But KBOO is different. It is your radio station. So give us a call. You can call 503-231-8187 with a question or a comment. And while you're doing that, you can also write out a check and drop it in the mail. Get the address. It's 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, 97214. You can go on the KBOO webpage and hit the donate button. So there are ways that you can send your support to KBOO. So getting back to our show, recently
we have two callers.
We have a couple callers. Let's go to our first caller.
Jack.
Oh, good morning.
Yeah, that's me.
Okay, how are you?
Good. I listened to Paul's show. Glad that he had Ray on. Ray's one of the voices countering the what I'm calling the received narrative that we're getting out of the Mickey Mac, he calls it. That's a nice analysis. And I wanted to point out that he makes the strong point that the people running our defense in Washington, they don't know nothing about this situation, really, about Russia. And mainly it's this, and he pointed this out too. And I've seen this and written about it online, and it's most of those people, if you look at how old they are, there's almost none of them are old enough to remember the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Mm-hmm.
How serious it was and how it ended. Russia took missiles out of Cuba, the U.S. took missiles out of Turkey, and promised not to invade Cuba again. And that was it. Leveler heads, cooler heads prevailed, and they kept us from kept the world safe, at least marginally. And these people running things now, they, in my opinion, I'll just say this simply, are no longer in possession of the sense with which they were born. Mm-hmm. And they're not old enough to, they're not old enough, and they don't study history. Pepe Escobar posted an article recently with the history going all the way back to the Byzantine era, and he's showing how the Christians on the east side and the Christians on the west side have been at war almost forever, and it's just an extension of that almost. Now I've got to go, and I appreciate your show, Pear, and thanks for taking my comment.
Well, thank you for your call. It's very interesting. You mentioned Pepe Escobar. I would really strongly recommend reading his articles. If I find his articles on online, he can't think of the website right now. Where just type in Pepe Escobar, and you will be directed to where his latest articles are. He's from Brazil, but he's been covering Russia and European affairs now for quite a while, and he's really a knowledgeable guy. So I think we have another caller on the line.
Yes, good morning.
We have another caller.
Yes, good morning, Pear.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to agree with the last caller and mention that at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, we had Trevor Noah, who spoke with actual brutal sarcasm regarding press freedom in America. And I think it went past the audience because everybody just assumed he was being he was sincere, that he wasn't being tongue-in-cheek. But of course, he was referencing the fact that we have Julian Assange, whose life is hanging by a thread now because he was reporting the truth. He was celebrating the press freedom that Trevor Noah was referring to. We have people that are losing their ability to actually raise money for their journalism. We have, I know you've talked about Consortium News. You've mm-hmm. quoted from them. They recently lost their PayPal account. So they are actually being politically punished for taking a divergent point of view from the mainstream narrative, from the dominant narrative about Ukraine. We had spoken previously about people losing Twitter accounts, YouTube accounts, being completely deplatformed, the content of years being erased. It's a form of digital book burning, you might say. Mm-hmm. Anyone that genuinely cares about press freedom in the way that Trevor Noah was speaking should be very worried right now. Even if you agree with everything that the Biden administration is doing with Ukraine, the idea that there can be no discussion, that there can be no dissent, that there can be no questioning of the dominant narrative, that's day by day becoming more and more of a reality. And it's being done through the private sector. It's not like journalists, I mean, with the exception of Assange, of course, but most of the denial of press freedom right now in America is being brought about through corporate efforts basically following a governmental directive, possibly, to silence dissent.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that it's that when it comes to Russia, we get a very one-sided U.S. Point of view, and even on the other the public radio station, you know, you just so much time is given over to official responses, official statements, and very little directly from any opposing points of view. And so it's you have to really kind of do a little digging to find out the sort of the complete the complete truth. One place to go where I go every day is Asia Times, and they carry articles by Pepe Escobar and other people. So I really recommend them. That's Asia Times. They go online. And so this is, you know, at times like this, we need all the information that we can get. And unfortunately, we are not getting it from the conventional corporate sources. And so I want to thank you for your call. Are you still online?
Yes. If I could mention something about NATO, because...
Yeah, okay, sure, go ahead.
NATO, as well as the Nazi problem, within official discourse in America right now, that's seen as a Putin propaganda point. That's a Kremlin talking point. So if the Kremlin brings up natural security concerns that any country would have about having missiles right on their border, as Ray McGovern was pointing out, that's never discussed, as if NATO, that's a red herring. When Putin talks about NATO, when he talks about Nazis, again, it's propaganda. We don't even have to respond to that seriously. I'd like to share with the audience two examples of NATO in action within our lifetimes, or at least most of our lifetimes.
Go ahead.
Serbia. 20 years ago, 22 years ago, there were two attacks on bridges. NATO was bombing Serbia at the behest of the Clinton administration. America was calling the shots. NATO is an American-dominated organization. Two bridges were attacked. One bridge was attacked simultaneously with a passenger train crossing the bridge. NATO disingenuously showed the cockpit footage, video taken from the attacking aircraft, and they showed the footage at double time, and they made it seem like, oh, the pilot had no idea the train was about to cross the bridge when he fired his missiles. So they created the illusion that the train was going twice as fast as it was, and oh my goodness, the pilot was confused. That was a passenger bridge that was that was a passenger train that was victimized by a NATO attack on a bridge as it was crossing the bridge. Second one was attacking a bridge, another bridge, which they chose market day, roughly midday, when the bridge was crowded with civilians. And then they came back again, and they did what was known in military circles as a double tap. So when they came back 10, 15 minutes later, naturally the people are flooding to this recently attacked bridge to help the survivors. Well, they get killed in the next assault. So that's NATO in action within our lifetimes, supposedly doing a peacekeeping mission, or whatever they call it. NATO is not a neutral player here, and the fact that our narrative in the West excludes NATO is any real concern. You get the idea.
Well, anyway, I'd like to remind our listeners that back when NATO was started, it was sort of portrayed as sort of a defensive alliance against this kind of aggressive Soviet Empire. But we have seen that the Soviet Empire collapsed, and NATO actually moved east. And this is sort of despite a promise that I forget exactly who, I think it might have been James Baker, said that NATO would not move one inch to the east. Well, that was very quickly that promise was broken, and some folks say that, well, it was only a verbal promise. You should have got to put it in writing, and to me, that's kind of like a con artist excuse. That sort of it's another way of saying that the U.S. Cannot be trusted. So we have NATO moving east. And this is a little sidebar here, is that apparently at one time Putin had expressed interest in Russia joining NATO. And so, but that was, from what I understand, that was quickly brushed off. The other thing about NATO is that in the year 2014, Viktor Yanukovych was ousted as the leader of Ukraine, and he was sort of friendly to he was friendly towards Russia. But he was elected president of Ukraine, and that's when you had these street protests in the so-called Maidan protests, and which got pretty violent at times. And some of the protesters, it's a question how many, that some of these protesters were kind of Ukrainian neo-Nazis or whatever. And so, but anyway, Yanukovych was ousted violently, elected president, and he fled the country. And since then, Ukraine has been kept in the Western camp. And if you look at a map, the map of Ukraine shows it's a very divided country. You kind of wonder why it is a single country at all, because the north and the west of Ukraine is populated by ethnic Ukrainians who speak their language, and then the south and the east is populated very heavily by ethnic Russians, and then kind of peninsula, Crimean Peninsula, is almost totally ethnic Russians. But somehow all of these two ethnic groups are kind of put together into one country. Well, you think in a situation like that, the smart thing to do would be to have some kind of agreement between them as to what kind of how they should be ruled, and also that should avoid playing games with each other and avoid bringing in outside interest.
We have two callers.
It's a very delicate situation. Do we have another caller on the line?
Two of them.
Oh, we have another caller. Let's go to our next caller.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for your great, great show. I agree entirely with your perspective. NATO is said to be a defensive alliance, but it has been offensive against Serbia and Yugoslavia. People in Europe understand this. Now, I wanted to share two perspectives, or summarize two perspectives. One, Noam Chomsky's statement that Ukraine's decoupling is foolish and dangerous. And Oscar Lafontaine saying that the U.S. is using Ukraine to provoke Russia to a nuclear war.
Mm-hmm.
You can find these statements of these interviews online, and it seems to me the U.S. is possessed by kind of an irrational old school. We have lost every war since World War II. We've been projecting our power. We've been scapegoating. We haven't been promoting freedom and democracy. You know, before the Iraq War, there was a list of retired generals, and you never saw a woman or an environmentalist because they had to get through that list of retired generals. Mm-hmm. It's the logic of war has to be broken. An agreement has to be made so that Putin doesn't lose face. The United States has to admit it's grievous propaganda error in not hearing Putin's request for the last, 20 years or even 30 years about security protection.
Well, maybe we should let him join NATO.
China and Russia don't have bases in Mexico and mm-hmm. Canada. We seem to be caught in by our provincial, insular nature, which is might be created by our wealth.
Well, we want to be king of the hill, you know. I think we have another caller on the line,
okay.
I believe. Well,
thank you.
So thanks for your call. Do we have another caller on the line? I think we have another caller. I thought we did.
Yes, we do.
Okay, put him on. Good morning. I hope somebody's on the line. Do we have somebody on the...
I'm here. Hello.
I hear a very faint voice. Well, I don't know if we have somebody on the line or not.
We lost him.
Oh, we lost our caller. But anyway, I'll try again. The number to call is 503-231-8187. We might go back in time where NATO moved east. Despite promises by, I believe it was James Baker, that we would not move one inch. Well, we did more than one inch, and we came to move right up to the Russian borders. And there are some, apparently, I've been reading that there are some people who think that the U.S. is trying to goad Russia into doing something so that we can really drop the hammer on them. I think we do have a caller now.
Hello?
Hello, you're on the air.
Hey, greetings. This is Harry. Thank you for taking my call. Hello? My thing is about, our media, how it's only one way. And with the Internet, I have a way of proving that is go to... In the old Soviet Union, there was two newspapers, Pravda and TASS. If you go to their website right now, TASS, you can't get through, or Pravda. So the U.S. government has blocked both those websites.
Really?
So we can't get their point of view what's going on in Russia. Next is what should Putin do? I think what Putin needs to do is atmospheric nuclear testing. He needs to blow up a bomb. Not usually Russia, when they blow up the bomb, either underground or on their territory. But this time, if they really want to bring peace and really shake up the United States military is to blow up a nuclear weapon in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean and one in the Pacific. Give them an idea of, hey, we're getting close to war. And the middle of the Atlantic, of course, is neutral territory, so they can blow one up there.
Okay, well, that's an interesting, I don't know. I don't. I myself think that'd be kind of a little bit reckless. But there's so much recklessness going on already that it gets kind of overwhelming sometimes. I want to thank you for your call. This is KBOO's Fight the Empire. My name is Per Fogring, and we've been talking about the situation in Ukraine. And so
we have another call.
We have another caller on the line. Go ahead. You're on the air. There's not too much time, so make it quick.
Oh, appreciate it. Yeah, two different angles. A bunch of years ago, Francis Moore LePay wrote a book about, it was called Food First. And it described how when Richard Nixon got rid of the gold standard in America, the fat cats of the world decided to buy the best agricultural land in the world. And at the time, the Ukraine wasn't available because it was in the Soviet Union, but East Pakistan was available, and that all the erosion off the Himalayas was going to improve that topsoil for the next 10,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when East Pakistan changed its name to Bangladesh. And the people of Bangladesh were driven off their farms because the fat cats bought up all of the farms and decided to sell the land, or excuse me, sell the food to more rich countries. So I'm just wondering if part of Putin's oligarchs' methodology is along the same lines, that the oligarchs have no duty to care, they have no duty to social contract, and that they just simply want to invest in the best topsoil in the world, and they don't care even if they make it poisonous with radiation. They would hypothetically own the best, the greatest quantity of topsoil in the world.
Well, I don't know. That's I haven't heard that. It's I got 1 minute left in the show, so but something that maybe. Our listeners can go online and see what they can find out for themselves, and then share it with us next time this show is on the air, which would be, let's see, this is the first Wednesday in May, and so we will be back in 2 weeks, which will be the third Wednesday in May. So I want to thank people for listening. I want to thank our callers, and this has been the Fight the Empire. My name is Bear Fogre, and stay tuned to KBOO. It's your radio station.